Bar 9, you know, see it overflow Friday. So check it out, you see it? Come out in the best behavior, you see it?
To the place where no one knows.
www.ckut.ca on the World Wide Web. News, interviews, and music featuring the voices of prisoners, their allies, and supporters. Tune in to the Prison Radio Show on the fourth Friday of every month between 11 a.m. and noon, and every second Thursday of the month between 5 and 6 p.m. To get involved in Prison Radio, or if you need to access past programs, email prison@ckut.ca.
Rehabilitation.
I wonder if you know what the word means. Do you? It comes from the Latin root habilis. The definition is to invest again with dignity. You consider that part of your job, Harvey, to give a man back the dignity he once had? Your only interest is in how he behaves. You'll conform to our ideas of how you should behave.
I am not a number. I am a free man.
You were a number, you weren't a man, you want to be a human. I wasn't Jim Crow, and hell, I was number 586.
Why do you do a warder's job?
It's a good job. Responsible job. Officers like myself trying to...
Scum.
We're only enforcing the law.
The law. When they hang my husband, is that just...
You're listening to the Prison Radio Show on CKUT 90.3 FM. Today is September 9th, 2021, marking the 50th anniversary of the Attica Prison Uprising in New York State. The Attica Prison Uprising is one of the most famous and deadly prison rebellions in history. In commemoration, this episode will discuss its history and the context around it. We're drawing our text today from the Attica Prison Uprising 101, a short primer, which is by prison organizer and abolitionist Miriam Kaba and Project Nia. Throughout this episode, you'll hear different voices reading material from this publication, interspersed with music written about Attica in the years that followed. Toward the end, there's a clip from the podcast, The Brief, featuring an interview with Heather Ann Thompson, author of Blood in the Water, The Attica Prison Uprising of 1971 and Its Legacy.
But first, we wanted to share with you an audio clip from a prisoner in Bordeaux who called us on Tuesday, September 7th to share some news. He tells us about frequent lockdowns in the prison since March 2021 due to staff shortages that he says are related to guard workplace actions like calling in sick on the weekends. He shares the impact of that kind of action on prisoners.
So basically, over here in Bardo Detention Center in Montreal, we're dealing with a lot of closing over the weekends due to low on staff. They're making us pretty much stay in our cells, like, pretty much 24 on 24. Some days we even have only 2 hours of exit on into our cell, out of our cells and everything. And basically, me personally, my parents are losing it outside. They're always worried about me. They're always wondering exactly what's going on because it makes no sense that every single weekend we're always locked up and we have only like 2 hours to get onto the floor. I feel that they're like destroying our rights completely. They're making us live what they're living outside because basically from what I heard from them themselves, they're saying that they're going against the government because the government is trying to take away their pension. So basically, like I was saying, they're making us stay in our cells. Sometimes we only have like 2 hours on the floor, and it's caused by the government like trying to take away money that is supposed to be given to them, and they're making us live their lives. and they're trying to like always put us like to the side. I've already had the guards discriminate us as basically not human. They were saying, what kind of, you guys understand that you guys have done all kinds of criminal things and everything, and they always say like nasty things to us. Like example, one of them ended up saying that you guys know where you guys are at. You guys did a crime, and like we're always outside and everything, and they're always saying that we're a bunch of criminals, and basically we have no rights, basically. And I've already talked to the sergeant over here about that, and basically his response was like, basically he's saying that like we understand that this is a problem that's going on with the guards, but it's not us to do something about it. It's the director, and obviously the director doesn't do anything about it. And basically I've tried contacting news reporters and everything to try making this going viral and everything, but unfortunately it never gets to the point that I want it. I'm always trying to find other ways of contacting. Finally, I started listening to KUT radio and end up getting the number that you guys ended up giving me, and I ended up starting to call you guys to go ahead and do something about this, because seriously, it's something that's really affecting all of us as detention people. We know that we've committed a crime, but we still have rights and should be respected, but unfortunately it's not. Okay. Basically they're telling us that it's like not their fault, and that they're deciding just not to show up to work because of what's going on outside. And see, like me, basically I find it really ridiculous that during the week, like Monday to Friday, there's no problem. We're always on the floor. Sometimes Friday we get like, we lose 2 hours of floor time. That's it out of like the whole day, because we're out from like 8 o'clock all the way till 10 o'clock at night on the weekdays. And basically we eat in our freaking rooms and our cells. There's not one day that we eat on the sector. We're completely demolished by the system, basically, and they just never want to try giving us the advantage of eating on the floors. They always lock us out. I have made complaints all the way to fourth level, where it goes all the way to Quebec City and get something done, but it never gets done because basically they have no control over it. And they're saying that we have to just calm down and wait for it to get better and wait for this to change. But, you know, there's no change happening. Me, unfortunately, I'm getting a little bit fed up. I've been here already for over 16 months. And it's getting to me that all this is happening, and it all started happening after the month of February of 2021.
What changed in February 2021?
Well, basically we just got out of pandemic lockdown, because our whole sector was in lockdown 24/24. We had no showers, no exit of the cell. We were washing ourselves in a little sink, and basically we had no exterior to going outside or anything for the yard or anything like that. And February 22nd exactly of 2021, they let us out after doing 22 days of pure lockdown 24/24. And basically from there, they started giving us chances. They started giving us like liberty and everything. And then smack, like at the end of like March, I would say like March 20th, they start giving us days where they're not coming to work. They're refusing to give us time on the floor, because we used to be able to eat on the floor before March 20th. But as soon as March 20th came up, they just completely locked us up, and they started giving us hard times. Basically, like I said, like we're dealing with a lot over here. I'm not the only one. There's other people around here. Basically, like there's a lot of people over here that's dealing with a lot of stuff. We had family at home. We'd call them every single day. Like me, especially, I always talk to my mom and everything. And my mom always freaks out that, like, we're locked up. And even her, she was always telling me to calm down and everything because I was trying to get someone out there to listen to us and make us understand what's going really on with this.
That was a prisoner in Bordeaux Prison, which is on the island of Montreal. If you're in prison and would like to let us know news that is happening to you, you can call us collect at 514-876-3748, and we will do our best to pick up the phone. Now back to our special episode to commemorate the 50th anniversary of the Attica Uprising.
Let's set the scene. The year is 1971. The Vietnam War has been active for over 15 years. Republican Richard Nixon is the 36th President of the United States. Republican Nelson Rockefeller is the Governor of New York State. Russell Oswald was the Commission of Corrections. Attica Prison was, and still is, a maximum-level correctional facility in upstate New York between Buffalo and Rochester. The land in this area is rural, farmlands, streams, big skies. For the most part, Attica's prisoners are men of color, removed from major cities and incarcerated far away from support networks, family, and community. Prison life is tense and intense. The major prisoner rights movement of the 1970s is just kicking off. Attica is wildly overcrowded with more than 2,000 people incarcerated in a joint meant to house 1,600. In 1971, 54% of prisoners at Attica were Black and 9% identified as Puerto Rican. Nearly all prison staff was white. Despite being a maximum-level facility, many of the prisoners were there on parole violations or lower-level charges. Like today, many of those prisoners experienced mental illness, survived trauma, grew up in deep poverty, had substance use disorders, and have experienced the grinding realities of racism and capitalism in America. Many of those incarcerated at Attica were also involved in political activism, including the Black Power movement and the struggle for racial justice. Many inside Attica were also veterans of the Vietnam War, struggling to reintegrate and build their lives following the violence of war. As you'll hear, on September 9, 1971, just over a month after the murder of Revolutionary George Jackson at the hands of prison guards, prisoners at Attica seized control of the institution, taking a group of correctional officers hostage as bargaining tactic. Following this, prisoners set up an internal governing body, electing leaders and representatives, organizing medical and food access, and importantly, releasing documents of demands. 50 years later, many of these demands are still being fought for. Those of you tuning in from prison will recognize discouraging similarities between the demands from 1971 and present-day struggles. Prisoners controlled Attica for 4 days. On September 13th, state troopers, correctional officers, and police forces charged Attica and opened fire, killing 39 people. Today, we'll explore that history. Let's get started.
August 1970. The men in Auburn Prison revolted. 40 of them are transferred to Attica. At the same time, a struggle begins at Attica for higher wages and lower commissary prices. It includes a petitioning and later a strike by hundreds of prisoners. The result in the alleged leaders being shipped out to other prisons and all the men in cell block B being locked in their cells for 2 weeks. It also results in commissary prices being lowered and a short while later in a small increase in wages. October 1970. Rebellions occur at several New York City jails. This includes the Tombs, where Herbert Blyden was a leader of the uprising. June 1971. The Attica Liberation Faction is founded by 5 prisoners. July 2, 1971. 27 demands are presented to the Commissioner Oswald and Governor Nelson Rockefeller by the Attica Liberation Faction.
Attica Manifesto, July 2, 1971. The following is a list of demands that were presented to Commissioner of Corrections Russell Oswald and Governor Nelson Rockefeller on July 2, 1971 by the Attica Liberation Faction. We, the men of Attica Prison, have been committed by the New York State Department of Corrections, by the people of society, for the purpose of correcting what has been deemed as social errors in behavior. Errors which have classified us as socially unacceptable until reprogrammed with new values and more thorough understanding as to our values and responsibilities as members of the outside community. the Attica prison program in its structure and conditions have been enslaved on the pages of this manifesto of demands with the blood, sweat, and tears of the inmates of this prison. The program which we are submitted to under the facade of rehabilitation are relative to the ancient stupidity of pouring water on a drowning man, inasmuch as we are treated for our hostilities by our program administrators with their hostility as medication. In our efforts to comprehend on a feeling level an existence contrary to violence, we are confronted by our captors with what is fair and just. We are victimized by the exploitation and denial of the celebrated due process of law. In our peaceful efforts to assemble in dissent as provided under this nation's U.S. Constitution, we are in turn murdered, brutalized, and framed on various criminal charges because we seek the rights and privileges of all American people. In our efforts to intellectually expand in keeping with the outside world, through all categories of news media, we're systematically restricted and punitively remanded to isolation status when we insist on our human rights to the wisdom of awareness. Manifesto of Demands. 1. We demand the constitutional rights of legal representation at the time of all parole board hearings and the protection from the procedures of the parole authorities whereby they permit no procedural safeguards such as an attorney for cross-examination of witnesses in behalf of parolee at parole revocation hearings. 2. We demand a change in medical staff and medical policy and procedure. The Attica Prison Hospital is totally inadequate, understaffed, and prejudiced in the treatment of inmates. There are numerous, quote, mistakes made many times. Improper and erroneous medication is given by untrained personnel. We also demand periodical checkups on all prisoners and sufficient licensed practitioners 24 hours a day instead of inmates' help that is used now. 3. We demand adequate visiting conditions and facilities for the inmate and families of Attica prisoners. The visiting facilities at the prison are such as to preclude adequate visiting for inmates and their families. 4. We demand an end to the segregation of prisoners from the mainland population because of their political beliefs. Some of the men in segregation units are confined there solely for political reasons, and their segregation from other inmates is indefinite. 5. We demand an end to the persecution and punishment of prisoners who practice at the constitutional right of peaceful dissent. Prisoners at Attica and other New York prisons cannot be compelled to work as these prisons were built for the purpose of housing prisoners, and there is no mention as to the prisoners being required to work on prison jobs in order to remain in the mainland population and or be considered for release. Many prisoners believe their labor power is being exploited in order for the state to increase its economic power and to continue to expand its correctional industries, which are million-dollar complexes, yet do not develop working skills acceptable for employment in the outside society, and which do not pay the prisoner more than the average of 40 cents a day. Most prisoners never make more than 50 cents a day. Prisoners who refuse to work for the outrageous scale or who strike are punished and segregated without the access to the privileges shared by those who work. This is class legislation, class division, and creates hostilities within the prison. 6. We demand an end to political persecution, racial persecution, and the denial of prisoners' rights to subscribe to political papers, books, or any other educational and current media chronicles that are forwarded through the U.S. mail. 7. We demand that industries be allowed to enter the institutions and employ inmates to work 8 hours a day and fit into the category of workers for scale wages. The working conditions in prisons do not develop working incentives parallel to the many jobs in the outside society, and a paroled prisoner faces many contradictions of the job that add to his difficulty in adjusting. Those industries outside who desire to enter prisons should be allowed to enter for the purpose of employment placement. 8. We demand that inmates be granted the right to join or form labor unions. 9. We demand that inmates be granted the right to support their own families. At present, thousands of welfare recipients have to divide their checks to support their imprisoned relatives, who, without outside support, cannot even buy toilet articles or food. Men working on scale wages could support themselves and families while in prison. 10. We demand that correctional officers be prosecuted as a matter of law for any act of cruel and unusual punishment where it is not a matter of life and death. 11. We demand that all institutions using inmate labor be made to conform with the state and federal minimum wage laws. 12. We demand an end to the escalating practice of physical brutality being perpetrated upon the inmates of New York State prisons. 13. We demand the appointment of 3 lawyers from the New York State Bar Association to full-time positions for the provision of legal assistance to inmates seeking post-conviction relief, and to act as a liaison between the administration and inmates for bringing inmates' complaints to the attention of the administration. 14. We demand the updating of industry working conditions to the standards provided for under New York State law. 15. We demand the establishment of inmate workers' insurance plan to provide compensation for work-related accidents. 16. We demand the establishment of unionized vocational training programs comparable to that of the federal prison system, which provides for union instructions, union pay scales, and union membership upon completion of the vocational training course. 17. We demand annual accounting to the Inmates Recreational Fund and formulation of an inmate committee to give inmates a voice as to how such funds are used. 18. We demand that the present parole board appointed by the governor be eradicated and replaced by the parole board elected by popular vote of the people. In a world where many crimes are punished by indeterminate sentences, and where authority acts within secrecy and within vast discretion, and given heavy weight to accusations by prison employees against inmates, inmates feel trapped unless they are willing to abandon their desire to be independent men. 19. We demand that the state legislature create a full-time salaried board of overseers for the state prisons. The board would be responsible for evaluating allegations made by inmates, their families, friends, and lawyers against employers charged with acting inhumanely, illegally, or unresponsibly. The board should include people nominated by a psychological or psychiatric association, by the State Bar Association, or by the Civil Liberties Union, and by groups of concerned involved laymen. 20. We demand an immediate end to the agitation of race relations by the prison administration of this state. 21. We demand that the Department of Corrections furnish all prisoners with the services of ethnic counselors for the needed special services of the brown and black population of this prison. 22. We demand an end to the discrimination in the judgment and quota of a parole for black and brown people. 23. We demand that all prisoners be present at the time their cells and property are being searched by the correctional officers of state prisons. 24. We demand an end to the discrimination against prisoners when they appear before the parole board. Most prisoners are denied parole solely because of their prior records. Life sentences should not confine a man longer than 10 years, as 7 years is the considered statute for a lifetime out of circulation. And if a man cannot be rehabilitated after a maximum of 10 years of constructive programs, etc., then he belongs in a mental hygiene center, not a prison. 25. We demand that better food be served to the inmates. The food is a gastronomical disaster. We also demand that drinking water be put on each table and that each inmate be allowed to take as much food as he wants and as much bread as he wants, instead of the severely limited portions and limited 4 slices of bread. Inmates wishing a pork-free diet should have one, since 85% of our diet is pork meat or pork-saturated food. 26. We demand an end to the unsanitary conditions that exist in the mess hall, i.e. dirty trays, dirty utensils, stained drinking cups, and an end to the practice of putting food on the tables hours before eating time without any protective covering over it. 27. We demand that there be one set of rules governing all prisons in this state instead of the present system where each warden makes rules for his institution as he sees fit. In conclusion, we are firm in our resolve and we demand, as human beings, the dignity and justice that is due to us by our right of birth. We do not know how the present system of brutality and dehumanization and injustice has been allowed to be perpetrated in this day of enlightenment. But we are the living proof of its existence and we cannot allow it to continue. The taxpayers who just happen to be our mothers, fathers, sisters, brothers, daughters, and sons
should be made aware of how their tax dollars are being spent to deny their sons, brothers, fathers, and uncles of justice, equality, and dignity.
August 21st, 1971. George Jackson is killed by correctional officers at San Quentin Prison. They contend that they shot him as he was attempting to escape. No one believes this. August 22nd, 1971. A hunger strike is called in honor of George Jackson in Attica. Prisoners marched into the mess hall for breakfast, single file, sat silently, and refused to eat. The commission put the number of prisoners participating in that silent protest at 700 out of a total population of 2,243. August 30th, 1971. 300 prisoners sign up for a sick call and occupy the hospital area to dramatize the substandard health facilities. This was the second peaceful protest in as many weeks at Attica. September 2nd. Commissioner Oswald visits Attica and meets briefly with Frank Lott, chairman of the Attica Liberation Faction. Oswald asks for more time to implement demands. He leaves early due to his wife's illness and leaves behind a recorded message that was played three times over the public address system. Oswald said, "I assure you that changes will be made." He asks for more time to implement the requested changes. September 8th. There was an altercation between correctional officers and two prisoners. Later that day, correctional officers led two prisoners, whom they believed to be responsible, to housing Block Z. The disciplinary housing unit, where inmates were locked down for 23 hours per day. Lay Lamarie, one of the two, had not been involved in the altercation. Observers saw officers strike Leroy Dewar, the other prisoner, while taking him to the block. Prisoners believe that Block Z was a site of routine, brutal beatings by correctional officers. September 9th, the revolt begins. Prisoners subdue Lieutenant Robert Curtis in a tunnel that divided the prison yard into quarters. A group of 15 to 25 prisoners eventually overpowered four guards and locked them in cells. The uprising quickly spread to other cell blocks, with more than 1,200 prisoners congregating in cell block D. Although members of the Attica Liberation Front did not participate in the initial rioting, they quickly joined in to move the prisoners toward more explicit demands for reform. The prisoners create a committee to negotiate with Commissioner Oswald and demand that outside observers be present. Once the inmates of Attica Prison took over the facility on Thursday, September 9, 1971, a committee of inmates drew up five demands as preconditions to end the takeover. These five demands would be broadened into 15 practical proposals that would form the basis for attempted negotiations among the prisoners, the Committee of Outside Observers, state prison officials, and representatives from the governor's office.
We are men. We are not beasts, and we do not intend to be driven or beaten as such. The entire prison populace has set forth to change forever the ruthless brutalization and disregard for the lives of the prisoners here and throughout the United States. What has happened here? But the sound before the fury of those who are oppressed.
You are listening to the Prison Radio Show on CKUT 90.3 FM. This is a special episode commemorating the 50-year anniversary of the Attica Rebellion. That last clip was Elliot L.D. Barkley, a leader in the Attica Prison Rebellion. Russell Oswald, Commissioner of Corrections, described L.D. as pure revolutionary. He was just 21 when he was murdered at Attica on September 13, 1971. The next clip is L.D.'s declaration to the American people, which is read on September 9, 1971. Like most of the audio in this episode, we weren't able to find the original recorded in its entirety, so you'll hear it through the voice of a guest reader.
The people of the United States of America. First of all, we want it to be known that in the past, we have had some very, very treacherous experiences with the Department of Corrections of New York State. They have promised us many things, and they are giving us nothing except more of what they already got, brutalization and murder inside this penitentiary. We do not intend to accept to allow ourselves to accept the situation again. Therefore, we have composed this declaration to the people of America to let them know exactly how we feel and what it is that they must do and what we want primarily, not what someone else wants for us. We're talking about what we want. There seems to be a little misunderstanding about why this incident developed here at Attica, and this declaration here will explain the reason. The entire incident that has erupted here at Attica is not a result of a dastardly bushwhacking of the two prisoners, September 8th, 1971, but of the unmitigated oppression wrought by the racist administrative network of this prison throughout the year. We are men. We are not beasts, and we do not intend to be beaten or driven as such. The entire prison populace, that means each and every one of us here, have set forth the chain forever, the ruthless brutalization and disregard for the lives of the prisoners here and throughout the United States. What has happened here is but the sound before the fury of those who are oppressed. We will not compromise on any terms except those that are agreeable to us. We've called upon all the conscientious citizens of America to assist us in putting an end to the situation that threatens the lives of not only us, but of each and every one of you as well. We have set forth demands that will bring us closer to the reality of the demise of these prison institutions that serve no useful purpose to the people of America, but to those who would enslave and exploit the people of America. Our demands are such. We want complete amnesty, meaning freedom for all and any physical, mental, and legal reprisals. We want now speedy and safe transportation out of the confinement to non-imperialist country. We demand that the federal government intervene so that we will be under direct federal jurisdiction. We want the governor and the judiciary, namely Constance B. Motley, to guarantee that there will be no reprisals, and we want all factions of media to articulate this. We urgently demand immediate negotiation through William M. Kunstler, Attorney at Law, 588 9th Avenue, New York, New York, Assemblyman Arthur O. Eve of Buffalo, the Prisoner Solidarity Committee of New York, Minister Farrakhan of the Muslims. We want Huey P. Newton from the Black Panthers. We want the chairman of the Young Lords Party. We want Clarence B. Jones of the Amsterdam News. We want Tom Wicker of the New York Times. We want Richard Broth of the Courier Express. We want the Fortune Society, Dave Anderson of the Urban League of Rochester, Brian Eva Barnes. We want Jim Hendling of the Democratic Late Chronicle of Detroit, Michigan. We guarantee the safe passage of all people to and from this institution. We invite all the people to come here and to witness this degradation so that they can better know how to bring this degradation to an end. This is what we want, the inmates of Attica Prison.
The 15 practical proposals handed to Oswald by prisoner Jerry Rosenberg. Practical proposals. 1. Apply the New York State minimum wage law to all state institutions. Stop slave labor. 2. Allow all New York State prisoners to be politically active without intimidation or reprisals. 3. Give us true religious freedom. 4. End all censorship of newspapers, magazines, letters, and other publications coming from the publisher. 5. Allow all inmates, at their own expense, to communicate with anyone they please. 6. When an inmate reaches conditional release date, give him a full release without parole. 7. Cease administrative resentencing of inmates returned for parole violations. 8. Institute realistic rehabilitation programs for all inmates according to their offense and personal needs. 9. Educate all correctional officers to the needs of the inmates, i.e., understanding rather than punishment. 10. Give us a healthy diet, stop feeding us so much pork, and give us some fresh fruit daily. 11. Modernize the inmate education system. 12. Give us a doctor that will examine and treat all inmates that request treatment. 13. Have an institutional delegation comprised of one inmate from each company authorized to speak to the institution administration concerning grievances quarterly. 14. Give us less cell time and more recreation with better recreational equipment and facilities. 15. Remove inside walls, making one open yard, and no more segregation or punishment.
September 10th, 1971. Uprising continues. Freddie Free observers assemble at Attica and pay a brief visit to D Yard. September 11th, 1971. Rockefeller refuses to come to Attica to aid in negotiations. He also refuses the prisoners' demand for amnesty. William Quinn, a guard held hostage, dies of head injuries. The Observer Committee negotiates the 28-point package with Oswald. This plan was intended to convey what the state would offer in concessions to the prisoners. However, the key issue of criminal amnesty was not agreed to. The prisoners reject the 28-point package because they do not trust the state to meet even these promises. Bobby Seale arrives at Attica. There were hopes that he could convince the prisoners to accept the 28-point package. Seale tells Oswald and the observers that he could not tell the prisoners what to do, but they let them know that he would support whatever decisions they made. Tom Wicker, New York Times reporter, describes an incident that took place in the observer's room. While Wicker was waiting to sign the list of those going in, he idly picked up a small, crumpled piece of paper from the floor and smothered it in his hands. "Brother Bobby," the note read in Wobbly's script, "our lives are in your hands. Come, Attica prisoners." Wicker stared at the note. One of the inmates must have smuggled it out of D-Yard to Seale, probably via one of the observers, sent as messengers to No Man's Land.
The 28 Points, September 11, 1971. The following are the proposals that State Corrections Commissioner Russell G. Oswald said that he would accept after a meeting with the Observers Committee on September 11, 1971. 1. Provide adequate food, water, and shelter for all inmates. 2. Inmates shall be permitted to return to their cells or other suitable accommodations or shelter under their power. The Observer Committee shall monitor the implementation of this operation. 3. Grant complete administrative amnesty to all persons associated with this matter. By administrative amnesty, the state agrees: A. Not to take any adverse parole actions, administrative proceedings, physical punishments, or other types of harassment, such as holding inmates incommunicado, segregating inmates, or keep them in isolation or in 24-hour lockup. B. The state will grant amnesty in regards to all civil actions that could arise from this matter. C. It is agreed that the state of New York and all its departments, divisions, and subdivisions, including the State Department of Corrections and the Attica Correctional Facility, and its employees and agents, shall not file or initiate any criminal complaint or act as a complainant in any criminal action of any kind or nature relating to property damage or property-related crimes arising out of the incidents at the Attica Correctional Facility during September 9th, 10th, and 11th, 1971. 4. Recommend the application of the New York State minimum wage law standards to all work done by inmates. Every effort will be made to make the records of payments available to inmates. 5. Establish by October 1st a permanent ombudsman service for the facilities, staffed by appropriate persons from the neighboring communities. 6. Allow all New York State prisoners to be politically active without intimidation or reprisal. 7. Allow true religious freedom. 8. End all censorship of newspaper, magazines, and other publications from publishers, unless it is determined by qualified authority, which includes the ombudsman, that the literature in question presents a clear and present danger to the safety and security of the institutions. Institutions spot censoring only of letters. 9. Allow all inmates at their own expense to communicate with anyone they please. 10. Institute realistic, effective rehabilitation programs for all inmates according to their offense and personal needs. 11. Modernize the inmate education system, including the establishment of Spanish language library. 12. Provide an effective narcotics treatment program for all prisoners requesting such treatment. 13. Provide or allow adequate legal assistance to all inmates requesting it, or permit them to use inmate legal assistance of their choice in any proceedings whatsoever. In all such proceedings, inmates shall be entitled to appropriate due process of law. 14. Reduce cell time, increase recreation time, and provide better recreation facilities and equipment, hopefully by November 1st, 1971. 15. Provide a healthy diet, reduce the number of pork dishes, increase fresh fruit daily. 16. Provide adequate medical treatment for every inmate. Engage either a Spanish-speaking doctor or interpreters who will accompany Spanish-speaking inmates to medical interviews. 17. Institute a program for the recruitment and employment of a significant number of Black and Spanish-speaking officers. 18. Establish an inmate grievance commission comprised of one elected inmate from each company, which is authorized to speak to the administrative concerning grievances and develop other procedures for inmate participation in the operation and decision-making processes of the institution. 19. Investigate the alleged expropriation of inmate funds and the use of profits from the metal or other shops. 20. The state commissioners of correctional services will recommend that the penal law be changed to cease administrative resentencing of inmates returned for parole violation. 21. Recommend that the Mancino hearings be promptly held and fairly held. This concerns the right of prisoners to be represented legally on parole violation changes. 22. Recommend necessary legislation and more adequate funds to expand work relief programs. 23. End approved lists for correspondents and visitors. 24. Remove visitation screens as soon as possible. 25. Institute a 30-day maximum for segregation arising out of any one offense. Every effort should be geared towards restoring the individual to regular housing as soon as possible, consistent with safety regulations. 26. Paroled inmates shall not be charged with parole violations for moving traffic violations or driving without a license unconnected with any other crimes. 27. Permit access to outside dentists and doctors at the inmate's own expense within the institution where possible and consistent with scheduling problems, medical diagnosis, and health needs. 28. It is expressly understood that members of the Observer Committee will be permitted into the institution on a reasonable basis to determine whether all of the above provisions are being effectively carried out. If questions of adequacy are raised, the matter will be brought to the attention of the Commissioner of Correctional Services for clearance.
September 12th. Uprising continues. Rockefeller again refuses pleas of the hostages, Commissioner Oswald, and the Observers Committee, as well as the prisoners, to come to Attica. September 13th, Bloody Monday. Rockefeller orders thousands of National Guardsmen, state troopers, and correctional guards to attack the prisoners. Hundreds of prisoners are shot. The state's forces shoot and kill 9 of the hostages. The prisoners have no guns. Many of the alleged leaders of the rebellion are selectively marked and assassinated by the state's forces. 39 men, both prisoners and hostages, die in the retaking of the prison. The corrections department says the hostages' throats were slashed by the prisoners. In retaliation, guards torture and beat prisoners. September 14th and after. The coroner's report shows that no hostages died of slashed throats. All died of police gunshot wounds. Demonstrations protesting Attica massacre begin in New York and around the nation. Beatings and harassment of prisoners continue. Several hundred of the rebel prisoners are shipped out to other prisons, and 80 of the alleged leaders are put on 24-hour segregation. On May 1st, the alleged leaders are also shipped out. Wyoming County Grand Jury prepares to indict prisoners for the rebellion. Ultimately, 62 prisoners are indicted for their role. The McKay Commission, created by Rockefeller, holds hearings about Attica revolt. The commission issues a comprehensive report titled Attica, the official report of the New York State Special Commission on Attica.
This next clip is generously shared with us by the podcast The Brief. It's from their interview with Heather Ann Thompson, author of Blood in the Water. It details the September 13th massacre on Attica. Be advised, some parts are difficult to listen to.
Heather, I wanted to go to the day of the raid, the Monday morning, September the 13th. Describe the raid for us.
Well, I mean, imagine a situation that leading up until this moment, the negotiations have been to the extent that such an incredibly conflict-filled situation could ever have been successful. This one was tremendously successful. They had agreed on something like 23 out of the 30 deal points. This was an incredibly successfully negotiated standoff. And the remaining conflict point was amnesty for the prisoners. And all that Rockefeller would have had to have done was come to that prison and stand outside of that prison and basically say to the men, I can't give you amnesty, but I will stand here and you have my word that you can surrender peacefully and you will not be harmed and simply release the hostages. And then we will implement those things that we agreed upon. That's all that had to have happened. And instead, on that morning, the fifth morning, as the men inside are waking up and it is freezing cold and it's raining and they think that negotiations are still in play. Meanwhile, outside, one of the most horrific assaults in American history is being prepared. They don't know it. They think that if there is going to ever be an assault, it's going to be like ones that have happened before, that they might have armed combat, meaning armed with sticks, armed with fists. And they have prepared for that, which is to say, set up some armed barricades and, you know, brandish your baseball bats and so forth. But what happens is, on that morning, a helicopter comes over and does some reconnaissance. And the guys are so naive that as it circles over, a cheer goes up. They actually have more faith in the state than they have a right to, because they think, some of them think, that Rockefeller's actually coming. And then the helicopter leaves. And that is when the panic sets in. That's when they, you know, then they, oh my God, not only is the helicopter left, but oh, the snipers have also left the route, because there'd been a lot of troopers up there and they're gone. And wait a second, we haven't seen the observers and it's pretty deathly quiet around here. What is happening? And so they make this ill-fated decision, which is to bring the hostages up on these catwalks. And they had talked about this because they thought, well, if we get to this point, this desperate, desperate moment, if we bring these hostages up on the catwalk, we can at least suggest to them that if you come in here, be clear, right? You know, you're killing your own, right? Because these are your state employees. And if you don't value our lives, maybe at least let's pray to God they value their own state employees. They value these white dudes if they don't value us, right? They value their own guards. They value their own civilian employees. And the guards, of course, are terrified because at this point, it's beginning to dawn on them that they are probably not that valuable. If it comes down to a showdown with prisoners, even their lives don't matter. So everyone's terrified at this point. And no sooner do they get up there than another helicopter comes over and starts dropping these canisters of CN and CS gas, which is tear gas. Again, kind of a misnomer because it's not really a gas. I mean, it is because it goes through the air, but it's a powder and it sticks to people's mucous membranes. And as this gas just fills everybody, people are toppled over, they are choking, they are nauseated, they are vomiting, they are blinded. And when everybody is basically incapacitated, that is when hundreds of troopers set out into the prison armed to the teeth with their personal weapons, with rifles, with Magnum 44s, with every possible weapon you can imagine, with ammunition outlawed by the Geneva Convention, with buckshot that will go in a 50-foot spray. And they start shooting. And for 15 minutes, all you can hear is a helicopter's megaphone.
I repeat, you will not be harmed.
Intoning over and over and over again, surrender and you will not be harmed, surrender and you will not be harmed, to the sound of da 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 da, and then it is carnage. There are 128 men shot, some of them 6 and 7 times. Ultimately, 10 hostages and 29 prisoners lay dead or dying. And that, as it will turn out, is the beginning of what will be days and weeks of torture and trauma. But even in this moment, the state will then step outside of the prison and tell the American people and the world, and this is really important, the world, that something entirely different happened, which is that the prisoners have killed the hostages. And what I think that really we need to understand is that in that moment, American history changes. I would even go so far as to say world history changes, because the world ends up emulating the United States' tough on crime, build more supermax prisons kind of approach to all of this. And it changes because a generation of people who was beginning to decarcerate and thought prisoner rights was a good idea turns away from it, thinks that Attica is evidence that it's not really about prisoner rights. It's about prisoners are being animals. that this is a betrayal of the civil rights movement, and it was all a lie. You know, the prisoners have always been telling the truth, but it's taken us decades to get the full story of what really happened at Attica out.
In the 3 weeks following the Attica massacre, prison rebellions spread like wildfire across the United States, as the country's 200,000 prisoners expressed their solidarity with the Attica rebellion. There were 13 rebellions reported between September 13th and September 30th, 1971, which doubled the number of rebellions since the start of that year. Prisoners at Walpole State Prison and Leavenworth Federal Penitentiary struck against prison factories, while prisoners in Atlanta, Georgia, and Terre Haute, Indiana, launched protest strikes against the massacre and against their own poor living conditions. In Detroit, over 100 police officers armed with shotguns and tear gas surrounded Wayne County Jail in response to rumors of a protest, while guards carried out a shakedown on the inside. And in Alderson, West Virginia, 37 women who were described as the more vocal, revolutionary types rebelled against their transfer to a maximum security prison until they were finally subdued by pepper gas. Prison protests erupted across the country, but the fires were hottest in New York State. The billionaire governor of New York, Nelson Rockefeller, had ordered all prisoners to be kept under tight security, but the uprisings continued all the same. At Great Meadow Prison in Comstock, about 75 inmates rebelled for 3 hours on September 15th, throwing bottles and setting fires. At Elmira Prison, 200 prisoners staged a protest of several hours, chanting slogans in their cells expressing solidarity with Attica inmates. And at Clinton Prison in Dannemora, 250 prisoners, some wearing black armbands, tried to march on the mess hall after hearing about the massacre. They were stopped by prison guards and state troopers carrying shotguns.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Prison Radio Show. If you'd like to learn more about the Attica Prison Uprising, we recommend checking out the zine We Are Attica by the Attica Defense Committee, the book Blood in the Water by Heather Ann Thompson, and episode 18 from the podcast The Brief, which you heard a clip from earlier. The entire interview with Heather Ann Thompson is great. You can also check out the entirety of the Attica Prison Uprising 101, a short primer, which this episode draws from by simply Googling the title. Finally, there's a new documentary set to be released this month called Betrayal at Attica. The following songs were featured: Attica State by John Lennon, Attica Blues by Archie Shepp, Rockefeller Drug Law Blues by the Felice Brothers, and Remember Rockefeller at Attica by Charles Mingus. As always, you can get in touch with the Prison Radio Show by writing to us at PRS, courtesy of CKUT 90.3 FM, 3647 University Street, Montreal, Quebec, Canada, H3A 2B3. If you're in the Montreal area, you can call us at 514-876-3748. There isn't always someone available to answer the phone, so leave a message or call us back if you don't get a response. We love getting song requests and suggestions for show material. Join us for our next show on Friday, September 24th at 11 a.m. Finally, this show will close with the voice of Splitting the Sky, one of the key players incarcerated at Attica.
It was a phenomenal revolution. It was a big sacrifice, but it was not in vain. Because here we are, and we're still talking about it. It's history that's not going to go away. It's just not going to go away.
Attica is all of us. Attica means fight back.
The exhaust from the prison van's going to heaven, but I'm going to Attica. Gonna put 100 miles between me and my dealing habit. I'm watching Poughkeepsie move by in the afternoon rain. My hands are turning blue from these cuffs they got me in. Tried to keep my job at the dollar store. Found out my mom was sick. Dollar wasn't enough no more. I promise you, mama, I'ma get you them pills. I got me a box of bags and a baker's scale. 15 grams of heroin, an ounce of speed. 15 years of life. Rockefeller. Rockefeller, Rockefeller, that's a long old time. My brother was shot down on Warren Street a year ago tonight. Can't you see the medics with his body in the siren light? I promise you, brother, I'ma be a good dad. I'ma give our children something like we never had. 15 grams of heroin. Rockefeller, that's a long old time. Johnny boys in orange clothes in the jailhouse yard. 20 needle marks on the arms of God. 500 picketers this morning on the governor's lawn.